Hi, this is Richard Campbell. Before we begin the show, I wanted to let you know that at the top, Ed and I talk about the suicide of his daughter and suicide awareness. If this isn't something you want to hear, skip ahead to 4 minutes and 30.
From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 736, IPv6 during the pandemic with guest Ed Horley. Recorded Tuesday, September 15th, 2020. Run As Radio is produced each week by Sound Thoughts LLC. For more information, visit SoundThoughtsLLC.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. I'm bringing back my friend today, Ed Horley, who's the co-founder of Hexabuild, focusing on advanced cloud, IoT, and security with IPv6. And he's the author of The Practical IPv6 for Windows Administrators from APress, and is a Pluralsight author. And he's the current co-chair of the California IPv6 Task Force, on the Technical Advisory Board for Infoblox, and in their IPv6 Center of Excellence, and speaks internationally on IPv6 at various conferences, although at least he used to. He's also a member of a club that I really wish he wasn't a member of. And I can't tell you how much I hurt for you. Ed, you're the member of the club of having lost a child.
Yeah, it's I guess it's a two club. It's having lost a child to suicide. So yeah.
That's a double whammy, sure.
Yeah, and September is National Suicide Prevention Month. Mm-hmm. And for those that don't know, just wanted to share, National Suicide Prevention Lifeline is 1-800-273-TALK, which is 8255. And given everything that's going on today with sort of the high stress around COVID-19 and our political climate for those in the U.S., I guess internationally too. Mm-hmm. And, you know, climate change stuff that's going on, because on the West Coast here, we're all on fire. California all the way, Oregon, Washington. And then, you know, really there's a lot of economic uncertainty in the world going on. And, you know, I thought it'd be worth mentioning for folks that are going through a lot of undue stress and might be going or suffering through some of that, that, you know, let's be human and, you know, reach out to each other if you're struggling there. I just wanted to provide that. And
absolutely. And in Canada, the number is 1-833-456-4566. And that's a free call. And I'm not going to leave you hanging here, friend, too. I lost my sister to suicide 35 years ago now. And it's something I certainly don't normally talk about, but she would have turned 50 this year. She was 15 when she took her life.
Wow. I'm so sorry, Richard. Yeah.
You're sort of faced with what life could have been, and you're at the beginning of this, friend, and I hurt for you for that, because it's a long road, and nothing's ever the same. But anytime we can help others, just embrace the reality that you can get help, and I know it's hard right now. It's very hard right now. This is the best time to call and to get support.
I couldn't agree more. It's my daughter unfortunately suffered from depression and anxiety and ultimately took her life because of those sort of conditions. And you know, I just want to reiterate, it happens to everyone. It's all races, ages, genders. It doesn't discriminate that way at all. So if you're, you know, if you're struggling, reach out. There's, you know, certainly no stigma, and no stigma from myself or Richard, let me guarantee you, as being folks who are dealing with this on a very personal level.
And I appreciate you talking about this, Ed. I know it's hard, and I'm glad we can do this.
Yeah, thanks for giving me the time to talk about it.
I did originally reach out to you to talk about IPv6. You are my IPv6 go-to guy, and I got to think the pandemic has changed things.
It has. It has. It's been an interesting, you know, switching and having so many people starting to do the work from home, right? Mm-hmm. And it's funny, because I was just on Twitter and we were having this big conversation about, like, okay, is it remote employees or is it really distributed teams?
Yeah. Right?
And I consider it distributed teams because that's how you need to be thinking about it now, because remote employees were people that, you know, for any given reason, the culture was still everyone was in an office. You occasionally had one or two folks that were out. For me today, the way I look at the world, this is a fully distributed team, and you're going to have to learn how to manage and work that way.
I very much have dealt with teams where it's like four of them are always in the room and one or two of them is out. And I started asking the ones that were normally in the room to go to their office and call in too.
Yes.
Just so that everybody at least had that moment of equality.
Yeah.
I do feel like, for better or worse, the pandemic has made us much more equal in those scenarios. We're all now, you know, is trying to sip through the narrow tube of connecting with our team.
And how do you communicate appropriately, right? Mm. There's a whole set of language constructs, whether you're on video or on audio only, and a lot of things that go that wrap around that. And I think this is the part that's interesting. We can get to the V6 in a second, but the part that's interesting is that we've all entered people's homes.
Yes, you're totally right. I mean, look at how the embracing of seeing the pets and seeing the kids, it's only entered people's homes, maybe not necessarily willingly, but for the most part, we've kind of celebrated it too.
Yeah. And I think the other part of it is that all of us are now guests in each other's homes.
Yeah.
And I think we need to recognize that before we were guests in each other's offices and there was decorum and a set of expectations around that. You cannot enforce that at someone else's home.
No.
Right. And so I think you need to be gracious about the fact that, you know, if a pet wanders into someone's office, well, that's their house.
Yeah. Right?
That's their home.
That pet has a right to be there. It's not unusual.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. I think that's
you're
and kids too.
As an adjacent story, because you're in California, so you're dealing with the smoke. I'm in Vancouver. We're dealing with the smoke. A friend of mine who happens to be in IT, he took his dog to work because the air quality is better in his office right now.
Yeah.
And nobody in fact, the reaction of the few people that were in the office, because they're rotating through the office during the pandemic, was, oh man, I should have thought of that. And some of them actually left work, went and got their animal and brought it to work.
That's awesome.
Because the air quality is that bad. I just love the compassion of that.
Yeah, I think it certainly humanized us all a lot more to understand that our situations are that much more challenging. And I feel for all the people that are, you know, two working parents with kids at home that are, you know, school age kids, especially in the preschool to, you know, young age going all the way up. I mean, I'm assuming high schoolers and middle schoolers are getting close to being able to maybe sit for a few hours to be able to participate in classroom activities. But can you imagine a first grader?
Yeah.
How difficult that is.
Oh, I know.
It's just, I feel for everyone there about how do you balance your time. But
yeah.
I mean, the good news is more than likely if they're sitting at home with broadband, then from a major, you know, cable provider or something, they've got V6 at home.
Yeah. It just seems, at least in North America, we generally work in V6 now, at least from the modem out.
Yes, from the modem out. And so, you know, depending on your scenario, but I think a good example is Comcast here in the US. Mm-hmm. I mean, we can talk about, you know, a few options up in Canada, but for here in the US, Comcast has got a, you know, pretty popular, pretty widely used and their V6 deployment is pretty ubiquitous now. And so you're going to have a lot of, you know, employees who are distributed who are using dual stacked networks. They're using V4 and V6. Mm-hmm. And we run into more and more folks who are scratching their head going like, you know, our whole MDM strategy or our whole VPN strategy, like it's not quite working the way we thought it was. I'm like, yeah, because you're not doing anything with V6. And so when they go to try to connect to Office or G Suite or Netflix or, you know, whatever service you're trying to capture and redirect across your VPN, you never see it.
Right.
It goes straight out V6 and it's gone.
It just works.
Out their internet connection. Yeah, it just works. And it becomes an interesting discussion around things like what we call VPN breakout, which is you're not passing a default route for IPv6 to come across the VPN tunnel. So you're not going to see any of that traffic. If you're not a V6 shop, you're never going to see any of that traffic.
Right.
Well, the majority of SaaS services that you probably, you know, you're using probably all have V6 enabled and Quad A records, and they're all just going to work on the public V6 internet because they probably have to because of all the mobile handsets too. Hmm. And that becomes a whole different, like, maybe our policies don't match and maybe it never did match, right? All along. Because they didn't have enough, quote unquote, remote employees to really figure out what was going on.
Yeah. And it wasn't that important. And suddenly it is.
Yeah. It becomes a lot more important because you don't, now there's pluses and minuses of like, do you really need to be doing, you know, that much, you know, Big Brother observation work? Cause I think a lot of people panicked early on about like, are my folks going to be productive at home? And are they going to spend the time that they're supposed to doing work? And all these other sort of what I consider irrational questions. What you should be talking about is how do I manage people to make them as productive as possible in the right amount of time? And you know, what is my exchange? Is my salary really about work performance? Is it about a number of hours? Like that's where your management team should be working about how to run a distributed team. That's a whole different skill set. But
and we've had some great conversations on this pandemic series about exactly that, that the managers that counted heads in offices were just sort of lost. It's like, no, now we actually need to talk about productivity. And there's this assumption that our productivity is impaired working from home, but it's not necessarily true. It's certainly going to be different.
Yeah, but it's going to be different. I think there's other factors too, like the stress that everyone's going through, the fact that we can't socialize in the same way, the fact that, you know, it's there's a lot of other, you know, sort of, you know, civil unrest issues going on, you know, wildfire, climate change related issues going on that you're not going to have people being as productive. There's a lot on people's minds.
Yeah. I don't know that being in the office would make that any different.
Yes. That's my point. And suddenly you're going to blame, you know, COVID-19 remote distributed work from home as being the issue. And it's probably not. It's one of many.
One of many, many different things. Yeah. So the measuring real productivity. And again, like I point folks back to the show I did with Squirrel and Frederick, about product, you know, that what do we measure of real productivity? What does that actually look like? And it's a great subject, but it's interesting to me on the networking side. I wonder, because I'm honestly, as a, you know, experienced engineer, I'm kind of astonished that the internet has held together through this, that the cloud providers have sort of made it through, it seems.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering if IPv6 played a role in that too, that did this push ISPs because it is a more efficient protocol to get more running?
Not necessarily. I think, I think, you know, every V6 session removes a V4 session, but you're still using bandwidth and you're still using, you know, that's the ultimate performance metric that really matters for service providers. How many sessions can you handle across a pipe and what's the distribution ratio for those? So I don't think that necessarily changed. What I found fascinating, and maybe it's useful for folks, if you actually search for Google IPv6 statistics, you can see the world, what Google's view is anyway, of the sort of IPv6 adoption, what's happening from a traffic percentage. And it gives you the classic sort of sawtooth diagram of like morning, evening, right? For every single day of like how much traffic they're seeing coming ingress into their network. That's native V6. And I think the thing that's most striking is that you see in March when people started shifting, you know, that, you know, January, February, we were all still probably working in offices, and come March is when things really started to clamp down, at least here in the US and looking at North American numbers. And what you see is that the delta, the height between the top and the bottom of the sawtooth shortens. And what that indication is that you're not having people, stopping to use V6 as much, because the delta change of them being in the office, then going home and using V6 and then coming back to the office and not using V6 is gotten smaller, right?
Well, interesting.
Right. And so you can actually see that, you can actually see the overall gap or the height of the actual distribution narrow down, and it's narrowed down and it stayed narrow all the way until the current date here that we're at, you know, in September. So it's very interesting that you can see it's a much wider bar in sort of previous and advance all the way until, you know, the early portions of their adoption curve. And you can see it just narrowing down and really getting much more precise and narrow, because there's less gap or less use gap. And I think that's an interesting thing to sort of understand, is that because people are at home and they have V6 and they're using it all the time, their transition from working to I'm watching Netflix or my kids are doing something on YouTube or anything else, the delta is much smaller. They're more consistently using V6 is basically what it's telling you. So it's sort of an interesting observation. It's not something you're going to notice in your day-to-day life. This is purely just a geek thing from a measurement basis.
But it also speaks to, it is the, and you've said this before on the show, that it is the businesses that are behind the curve in terms of getting V6 networking running.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And so that's that becomes an interesting proposition. And I sort of wonder how this is going to impact things sort of going forward, because I don't know what the policies are going to be about how many folks are going to end up back in the office, you know, what the mix and demographics is going to look like. I think there are so many people that are sort of rearranging their lives around the fact that this might go on much longer. And they're like, you know what, I don't need to live in the, for instance, the Bay Area with the price points that are required. I'm distributed now anyway. I'd rather go out and find someplace with more property. You know, more space for my kids.
Yeah, that is an interesting wave, right? It's like, why do if I'm not getting none of the benefits of living in the city, why am I living here?
Right. Now, I used to do it because I was close to my office, schools, everything. Well, my kid's not in school, right? Mm-hmm. They're home based. I gave up two rooms for the same cost point. Why don't I go get those back? Like, there's lots of things that go into a decision-making process. Taxes too, right? Like, there's a whole set. And I think, V6 plays a little bit of a story in some of this because of just accessibility and what it provides, and the fact that, I think mobile has become much more important. So all of us, in terms of a mobile handset, you know, if you're on T-Mobile in the US, you're on V6 only on an iPhone, for instance. And so, you know, everyone has to make their services available this way now. And so if you're launching a new application service and not looking at V6 enabling it, you're going to eventually run into some structural problems about serving at least a portion of the demographic. And then the other question is, do you want to trust someone else to do the translation for you? Yeah. Which is what T-Mobile has to do. They have to do NAT64, DNS64 in order to get those clients out to V4 only resources. So it's, those are the sorts of impacts that we're seeing. I think it's not something revolutionary. We have seen a lot of companies scramble to get V6 enabled at their edge for things like VPN.
Yeah.
Because they realize that they want to have control over those end client stations, bring what V6 traffic they're doing, bringing it back into their corporate head end, whether that's a cloud provider, their data center, you know, colocation, Equinix, wherever they're going to be, you know, running their stuff, or their actual corporate office. But there's definitely interest in terms of figuring out how to do that, and I think that will be many people's first sort of foray into seeing V6 as a regular citizen on their network, as something that's being managed by their corporate team.
That's fascinating, and Ed, I'm going to interrupt for one moment for this very important message. This episode of Run As is brought to you by the new Virtual Dev Intersection and SQL Intersection Workshop event. If you've ever listened to the SQL Q&A shows on Run As, you've heard the fun, knowledge, and experience of some of the workshop leaders at SQL Intersection. And for the first time ever, the event is going virtual December 9th and 10th. Go to virtual.devintersection.com to register and check out the amazing lineup of workshops. And there will be great keynotes from Scott Guthrie and Charles Manana, and the workshops cover topics including Azure, .NET development, as well as SQL Server-related materials. Spend a few hours and go deep on important topics at virtual.devintersection.com. And we're back. It's Run As Radio. I'm Richard Campbell. That's my friend Ed Horley. We're talking about IPv6 and the current state of affairs, especially during the pandemic. I begin to wonder if the folks that are still V4 only are just going to start to see performance degradation. Like, at what point do ISPs start putting pressure on them?
So I don't think they'll put pressure on them, but I think, you know, when you go through, there's real, you know, good numbers available in terms of sort of the performance and measurement difference between V4 and V6. You're just not going through as many NAT and state changes.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, you take a penalty every single time you go through NAT, and a state is kept someplace for you on your behalf. Number one, you have to go through and get your actual, you know, headers translated every single time. And then a new checksum. But for V4 anyway. And then on the V6 side, it's usually just straight on the raw internet and off to the races you go. You can still have a stateful firewall, so don't think there's not security, but it's just a difference in terms of just not having that introduced latency. And I think that starts playing into things like gaming and real-time voice and video conferencing and things of that nature that, you know, over time, you know, I don't know if that gap will narrow between V4 and V6, but today it's definitely a performance gain that V6 has over V4.
Yeah. And it's certainly, again, if you're that sensitive about performance, you should be running all these high performance things in the cloud with V6 all the way anyway. You don't virtually have a choice on any of that. But when I think about it I don't know that anyone in IT in March and April, when they were scrambling to get everyone working from home, thought a lot about V6. It was about getting it working.
Yeah, I would agree. And I don't think that's necessarily had to be the top of their list of thinking about. I think these are all the use cases that come out secondarily.
Yeah.
You're trying to get your edge security stuff done. So you're probably doing like Zscaler and like, you know, there's probably a ton of stuff that they're trying to figure out from an enterprise basis about how do I secure endpoints and how do I make these services available? How do I get the right sort of VPN technologies in place?
Yeah.
And you're going to solve that with V4. Just realize that there's a lot of cases where V6 is sort of naturally already there and it's along for the ride. Yeah. And it could be better.
Or better. Yeah. And it's so, and like so many things on our IT to-do list, IPv6 has always been there. It's just not been a priority. So it is interesting to me to think in terms of now that we're over that initial wave and we recognize that work from home is likely never going away. The pandemic will end.
Yes.
But I think a non-trivial number of people now that they have work from home are going to go, I kind of like this. Like it's going to stay. We should be optimizing. You know, we've talked a number of times in this series about, okay, let's go clean up some of the things we did in the rush to keep everyone working, better security and better configuration and so forth. But
yeah, compliance.
Yeah.
Oh, geez. Dropped.
Great conversation about BitLocker. Like those, all those drives you hauled out, are they secure? But the fact that V6 can make a difference with this distributed connectivity problem is huge. Like that's very valuable. So you just got to put some cycles into it.
Yeah. And I don't think it's necessarily something that, you know, I think this is going to be something where, you know, really the residential and the service provider and the content providers, they're all done on the V6 side for the most part. I mean, you're seeing that. What's interesting now is because of all the distributed people working from home, that they can leverage V6. And so suddenly the enterprises are like, oh, well, I can have another way to be able to provide access into our network. And this is something we should be evaluating and looking at. And is this a posture and security risk? Like you could, and you know, if you choose to ignore it as an enterprise, that could be to your detriment because you could quote unquote be supposedly looking in the channel. You could have a machine that's exploited. You exploited my machine via V6
right.
across my Comcast connection through a drive-by or whatever else is going on and web exploit, but it's talking V4 to the inside corporate network and exfiltrating data via my V6 connection. You don't see any, because the V6 side, you're not monitoring or watching. You don't have any application insight. You're not tunneling the V6 traffic back to you. If you're a full tunnel soda shop, I don't know why you would be, you know, get cloud services and just secure those on that end and hopefully have the cloud service provide that data exfiltration capability so that you sort of know what's going on. But I think those are the sorts of interesting discussions of like, do we really have the security posture we thought we had? And many times when we sit down and start showing them, you know, showing customers and large scale Fortune companies are typically who I work with.
Well, and generally when you talk about IPv6, you always talk about it. It's more secure than IPv4 because IPsec is default. But I got to think there's still other issues that folks are not focused on.
That's not necessarily true.
Oh, I mean, okay. It's my misconception.
It's built in to have IPsec, but V4 is built in to have IPsec today now too. There's not a networking stack for V4 that's distributed that doesn't have IPsec capabilities. The only difference really written in the original RFC was saying if one side chose to do it, that they must be accepted by the other side.
Right.
And so that's where people got the concept that, you know, security was baked into V6. It's baked into the protocol stack, but it's baked into the protocol stack for V4 too. If you get the other side that says, I must talk to you with IPsec, it's going to be like, okay, let's get a session built. Right. So I don't think anything is super unique there anymore from a delta value of how secure it is. I think the real question is from a security and posture standpoint is you've got a protocol running around that you don't know anything about. So just like in any other situation, you know, it's like, well, if you just ignore that some person in your corporate environment set up IPX and decided to run an old IPX network on top of that, and you can't see anything going on with it because you're not looking, you have no clue because you don't know what's actually running in your network. Well, guess what? They can run around and pass a bunch of traffic on top of your IP network and you never know, right? They're passing it on IPX. It's not even happening over the IP network. Right? and that becomes those sort of scenarios where that's the gap in a security policy.
Right.
Leaving out V6, you know, that's willful ignorance. Not knowing about V6 is, you know, just lack of knowledge. And getting that into the fold for security policy is probably important. But I think more and more companies are starting to figure that out now because of what's happening today with with COVID-19 and with so many remote work from home, and they're like running into these weird use cases where they're like, oh, I don't understand why we're not seeing that traffic. And then they go back and they analyze, they work with help desk, they work with that remote employee, they sit down and look at their machine, they're like, ooh.
It's actually communicating with V6 and we didn't realize that was possible.
Right. Yeah. You had V6 enabled at home. We didn't even think about that.
Yeah, sure.
And they're like, oh, okay. Light bulb goes off. And there's different ways to mitigate it. I'm sure there's a whole handful of people that are running around disabling IPv6 at people's homes and saying like, you shouldn't be running that. But, you know, there's a whole handful of people who are like, oh, we got to get this under control. Let's get it under our corporate management. Let's figure out how we're going to deal with this. Let's set up the right policies. Let's, you know, make sure that we're doing the right things. And that's a company that's taking the right approach to it.
But, right.
You know, you can't solve for all cases, but that's just one of the things where I think we are seeing more and more buzz talking around V6 just because of these related issues with what's going on today.
Yeah, without a doubt. And just really, and that's just a networking stack. If you're someone who's built a system based on firewall perimeters to insecure machines, those machines are still going to get exploited. Like, you still want those, you've got to secure in depth. The firewall is a vague concept even these days, it seems.
I think you need to secure across both methods, right? So mm-hmm. V4 and V6, and it needs to be something that that is a top priority for security teams, simply because it's a footprint of I wouldn't say I'd say it's a gap for most security teams because they don't have the skill sets around V6.
Yeah, or the experience. So
they're very nervous to deal with it because they don't want to show that they don't know something about a particular space, which is really weird, because if someone else walked in from an application team with an app they'd never seen before, they'd be like, all right, let's learn it. Yeah. Right. But I guess a networking protocol feels so much more fundamental that they're unwilling to serve the cards of like, yeah, we never dealt with that before. We're gonna have to sit down and figure it out.
Yeah. Which seems like a terrible mistake. New networking protocols do not come very often, but plenty of new other technologies come down the pipe. Like, we've been modifying IPv. You remember when NAT was weird and new and we were trying to get it right?
Yep. Yeah. And you had to do all sorts of, you know, like, we didn't understand how applications were actually, you know, did they include addresses in their in their payload, like, yeah. FTP did, right, in the protocol basis. So you had to do special fix-ups for all of that sort of stuff in order to get the protocol to work. Now we just don't even think about applications traversing NAT anymore.
Right.
And I think we will eventually get there with V6, where we just don't think about it from a standpoint of how that's going to work. And for security teams, it's really the onus is on them to start getting educated about it, to really start having an understanding of it, so that they can put it in the matrix of things that are under the realm of, you know, sort of policy and control. And that's not a bad thing. And
no.
I typically have found that networking teams have very little structural difficulty deploying IPv6 and understanding it. It's like, mm-hmm. if you understand how to do basic networking, it's not like the routing protocols are changing. It's not, yeah, the address format's longer. It's got a couple characters. You got the A through F thing. You're like, what's that? That doesn't belong in a,
that's not right.
My address. But, but it's, outside of that, once a network team gets it done, they're like, yeah, that wasn't so horrible.
No.
It's everyone else who's like, what the heck just happened here? And how does DNS, you know, working differently, and how do my apps behave with this thing, and what's this whole dual stack situation, and how do I deal with happy eyeballs, and which one is actually what session? Am I going over V4 or V6, and how do I figure it out, or am I doing both at the same time?
And if the developers have been depending on IPv4 behaviors and IPv4 networking information, like, okay, that was a mistake. You know, there's an abstraction that means you don't care what the transport is, and you should have been using that.
Well, I mean, it's not entirely their mistake. So if you're doing things like, you know, logging an address, you know, which is a logical thing to do, right? Yeah. You drop a log file that has it. Well, maybe you made the mistake of building a 32-bit address field, right?
Right,
and said that's that, and maybe you didn't deal with it as a blob or something, right?
And just recognizing it's going to be different now.
Different, yeah. And you know, suddenly you've got 128 bits that you're trying to stuff into a 32-bit field, and you know, things just don't work out very well.
You're going to be sad.
But those are things that happen even for application developers over time,
sure.
Right? Of just like, oh yeah, well yeah, we switch from you know whatever. Yeah.
You were doing NetBUI transport once upon a time, 20 something years ago.
I don't know. I mean, even character formats, like, you know, okay, we moved to, you know, one ASCII type to, you know, another or whatever.
Yeah, UEF. D2 Unicode or any of those sorts of things.
Unicode or anything else. You had to go through those changes. This is the same sort of thing.
So well, I'm also thinking in terms of, you know, once upon a time, DDoS attacks in IPv4 were really difficult. And we ended up with appliances and tooling that made it really much easier to manage. I mean, the traffic is still the traffic, but...
Oh, and then we made it a SaaS service.
Yeah.
We made it CDNs and said, you go deal with this. You manage a network.
Yeah. Now, you know, move that load off. Like, I got to think we're going to go through the same cycle with IPv6 in some respect, because there are exploits that are uniquely IPv6 that we're eventually going to have to containerize and push off.
Yeah. And I think the service providers are pretty much ready for most of that. The CDN networks are already V6 enabled. All right. The major CDN networks are already that way. So I think anything in that arena is probably already there. I think the weirdness is all around, like, I don't get on a local host how I can have three IPv6 addresses on me. Right? I've got a link local address. I got a global unicast address that is my permanent address. And then I got this temporary address that's also a global unicast address, but it goes away after a certain amount of time. And then I get a new one. And what's going on there? And why do I have that thing? Like, there's all these different parameters around how addresses are built and differences in operations. And Richard, we talked about this a bunch in the past.
Sure.
Like, operations is really where it's at, right? Design's great, but operations, that's where the, you know, rubber meets the road. And the reality is, if you have to change your operation principles about how you're doing things, that's much harder than even changing design architectures and adopting new design architectures. Just changing your operating principles for the things that you have in place today, that's hard. And I think that's part of the challenge with V6 for many people in their client-side network deployments. Like, oh my gosh, I got this thing called Slack. Wait, and before I only had two options in V4. I manually or statically assign an address, or I use DHCP.
Right.
That's it. No one thinks that a PIPA is a legitimate way to assign an address, you know, self-assigning an address in a 169, address. It's like that. That's how my help desk tells that, you know, my
network's
broken.
You're not on. Yeah.
Yeah. So the fact that my machine is self doing that in V6 with a link local address, or like, I don't know what to make of that. And then I get this global unicast. I can get that through Slack, DHCP V6, or I can manually assign it. Like, suddenly there's this whole third category, which is really more like four categories, depending on which way you deploy it. That adds operational complexity.
Yeah.
Right. And you and I both know how painful that is in terms of change. And
sure.
So I give a lot of people a lot of leeway in terms of I meet with a lot of customers, you know, doing V6 deployments at bigger enterprises and trying to figure their way through it. And I'm never judgmental about that sort of stuff. We try to be very pragmatic of saying, like, you know, you're at where you're at because you have operational need requirements. You have priorities around what your business is doing. I said, often we're talking with people about V6 because it's a strategic tactical business advantage, or it solves a particular problem. And today, with things that are going on right now, we've had a lot of companies that have come to us and like, you know, we want to use cloud as our first adoption for V6.
Interesting.
We don't even want to do it on, it doesn't matter in the office anymore.
Yeah.
No one's there. But if we do it in the cloud, we can provide services that way. Mm-hmm. We can start extending what we can do. And we've had a lot of customers who are talking around using things like merger and acquisition strategy. Like, how do I acquire a company, get their assets moved over, and my entire team spending their life readdressing resources?
Yeah.
What a huge waste of time.
Yeah,
why don't I just assign them V6, let them put V6 addresses on the things that we need to talk to. They'll talk to us on V6, and we just leave their V4 alone. We don't even touch it.
Yeah. It's not even important. Keep it isolated.
Yeah, which is the same thing you could do with your employees at home if they have V6 too, which mm-hmm. is an interesting thing. It's like, yeah, we don't even bother with VPN if they've got V6. And that's the same strategy with SaaS services too. That's how Office 365 becomes as sticky as it becomes, because it's like, yeah, we don't care. I don't care what network. As long as you have internet access, O365 is going to work, or G Suite's going to work.
Right.
We don't have to funnel you through some special corporate network in order to make those things happen, right? Like Exchange way back in the day, right? For
yeah,
us
yeah.
to get that.
To go through the gateway. Yeah.
Right.
It makes it a lot simpler. I feel like this is mostly an education problem then, that folks just need to know more.
Yeah, I think I think that's part. I mean, that's partially why I do the task force work and why we chat.
Yeah,
is to let people know, because if you don't know about it, it's going to be one of those weird things where you're like, I just see these extra addresses on my host, but I don't have any actual global V6 enabled, so I don't worry about it. When I go home, I don't think about it
because it just works. Yeah,
just work, and so it's just working behind the scenes, and you're like, okay, it's all good. So I think, you know, it's something where if people start playing around on their machines at home and start seeing that V6 traffic, and you know, certainly you're more than likely, if you're running Netflix at home, it's using V6. If your kids are watching YouTube, it's probably using V6. If you're doing most of the major services, it's probably doing V6 natively. So it's impacting a lot of people in terms of the traffic they're already pushing across the internet today. If you're doing Facebook, you're doing it that way. And so I think that's the difference, is that I think we're put in a situation where we're going to notice a lot more of what the traffic types actually are and what's happening there. And I
should
think
I be still steering people to your book? Because I do. I know it's a few years old, but it did seem to me like the primer.
Yeah. I mean, it's I don't think anyone, the only more recent IPv6 books that have come out is Rick Graziani did an update for his book on IPv6 fundamentals. It's a second edition from Cisco Press, which is a fantastic book. Rick he's on the California V6 task force with me, and a fantastic book. It doesn't cover Windows per se in the same way that I cover Windows. But funny enough, a lot of the things and caveats I had to put in the book around structurally working around a bunch of things, they fixed in the creator's update. So it's like, you know, things like, oh, well, you have to turn all these tunnel services off. And if you just wanted to do V4 and V6 and you don't want to have it do Teredo or Isotap or 6-4, you got creator's update. You don't worry about any of that stuff. They turned it all off for you.
Yeah.
Which is partially me. You know, it wasn't just me, but there are a lot of people screaming like, let's just turn all these tunneling services off because we don't need them anymore. We've got enough native V6 deployment. We don't need to tunnel over V4 to get quote unquote V6 support anymore.
Right. So it's just that the field has moved along enough now that.
Yeah, exactly. Like you don't need that crutch anymore. So they just turned that service. It's still in the Windows operating system. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. So if you need to run Isotap for any given reason, you know, God save your soul first, but secondarily, you can turn it on and actually use it if you want to.
If you have to, yeah.
If it is available still. But yeah, by default, it's just turned off. There's no reason to have it on anymore.
Should we talk a little bit about IPv6 buzz? Because, you know, I have a lot of respect for anybody who can get a podcast past its first 50 episodes. That seems to break a lot of people. So
yeah, yeah.
You're in a rarefied atmosphere, friend.
Oh, thanks. Well, I mean, nowhere close to yours. I mean, it's your show's the number of podcasts and shows you've done is quite noteworthy. But you know, we've myself and Tom Coffeen and Scott Hoag, we host the IPv6 Buzz on the Packet Pushers at packetpushers.net, and all we do is talk about V6. So if you're glutton for punishment and you want to hear more V6 discussions, you know, you can jump on over and give us a listen. We'd appreciate it, and we're always open to folks sending in listener questions and everything else. Just like, we try and talk to interesting people in the V6 space about what's going on and you know, operational issues, design issues. And occasionally we navel gaze around why in the world this thing happened with V6 versus V4, and even sometimes around V4 related issues as they relate to V6. So that's the theme of the show.
Yeah. Well, and I certainly keep an eye out on the various sites that are trying to keep track of the progress of IPv6. Like, I don't know if there's necessarily a tipping point, or would you just argue we have tipped?
Yeah, I mean, so there's different tipping points depending on where you are in the world. Like India, in 2019, India just, it was a rocket ship from 2017 to 2019 for India as a country. And mainly because of Reliance Jio as a mobile provider there, which is an entirely IPv6 only mobile provider, very similar to what T-Mobile did for on the US side. They did there, and they were a brand new mobile provider, and they basically made India in two and a half years upwards of 60% IPv6 adoption. Right? It's like staggering numbers like that. There's different locations in the world, and Canada actually took off like a rocket here in the last 2 years. So it's very different. The landscape has changed quite a bit. You can go to the World IPv6 launch as a measurement site that you can sort of read up. Akamai's got some great measurement tools because of their CDN network. They can see everything sort of all over the world in terms of adoption around there. And so they've got a great measurement site. Cisco's got the SixLab IPv6 site for measurement. And then I mentioned the Google IPv6 statistics site that you can go check out, you know, per country and see what the adoption rate is and things like that.
And there is clearly still some providers that are just not there yet.
There's a whole set of providers who aren't there yet, and that's okay. I mean, I don't want people to get the idea that if they don't have V6, they're a whole horrible provider, and
right.
they can't do the right thing. Just realize that over time, as more and more of the internet shifts to being available over IPv6, if you don't have at least dual stack available to you, there is a chance, because as new services come online, if they don't have V4 available to them, they will only come out on V6 eventually.
Yeah.
And you will not be able to connect to them, or they'll have to build a translation service for you, and you're relying on someone else to get to that resource. Not a great strategy. And so you want to be able to at least participate on the full internet. And there's a whole different discussion another time where we should talk about what, you know, what we grew up with as the internet, I think is going to change radically over the next few years because of the scale and the size of sort of the backend networks of Facebook and Microsoft and Amazon and Google are all building from a private peering basis, and the reverse happening around Russia wanting to back away from public internet peering and be mm-hmm. able to survive on their own.
And China certainly is done
China that. with a slightly different policy about, you know, firewalling and frameworks mm-hmm. and other nation states talking about how they want to, you know, Europe and the EU as protecting their resources and citizenships around privacy. And I think there's going to be a whole set of debates and discussion that might bifurcate how the internet works versus how it is, you know, sort of free, public, and open internet that we originally talked about and we originally built.
Right? One would argue that, you know, the internet having come out of the US, admittedly initially designed to resist nuclear war, but mm-hmm. fundamentally manifests the belief system the Americans present.
Yes.
Of the free and open kind of mindset. There's a whole other set of debates around that, but we'll leave that on the table for now. And so that in other cultures with other belief systems, they start to grasp the fact that the way the internet works has got a fundamental political bias.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's one of the interesting things around, you know, what, you know, does your culture and nation state fit the model, and can we accommodate as you know, sort of starting the internet in some ways, can we accommodate those other countries in the same way based off of their new requirements? And is it even something feasible or something that we should be doing?
Yeah, you've definitely just written an abstract for a whole other show, Ed, right there.
Yeah.
I think we should do that. Folks can reach out to us and tell us, yeah, make that show.
And they're far smarter people than me that you should be talking to about that.
I'll have to think about that for a while. So who could bring it in? Well, you admitted to me just before we started recording that IPv6 buff. We got Vint Cerf on the show for your 60th episode. Congratulations. It'll be out by the time this is out. Do you talk about who would I want to talk to about that?
That is the level of individual you want to talk to about that.
Yeah, no kidding.
There's folks like that, probably Jeff Houston, who's the chief scientist at APNIC, based out of down in Australia, is a wonderful resource too, and has some fantastic measurements around IPv4 and IPv6 and mm-hmm. some of the characteristics and behaviors. He's the one who does. He was the one that was actually hired by Vint for Google to sort of figure out how to do like all the clear dot and AdWord portions to figure out who's going over V4, V6, or dual stack, right? And coming up with that little hack to do all of that and serving up AdWords to make all that stuff happen. And he's done some fantastic research on his site. So if you're interested in that, just pure internet research, never mind V4, V6,
sure.
Like some pretty fascinating things, just even around DNS and DNSSEC and everything else that's sort of core and fundamental to make the internet even function.
You know, the original show for this pandemic series was the one I did, for better or worse, on April 1st, because I thought my gag show wasn't a good idea. And I made the point at that time that this was a time where technology was going to get us through this, that we are in a technology society and suddenly we're going to depend on it a lot more. And it's up to us as the technology experts in our circles, whether it's our jobs or our families or anything, to sort of step up in leadership. We're needed. And clearly, we're here.
And this becomes an equal access right issue too, mm-hmm. especially here in the US around, you know, especially when we're seeing, you know, kids, you know, really it's an access issue in terms of if you're in the wrong demographic and not in an area that's being supported by providers, and you're happen to be low income or poor, mm-hmm. that it becomes a big issue. Like, how do you get access to even do schooling?
Yeah, no, we get the classic photo of two kids sitting outside of a Starbucks with their laptops trying to do the schoolwork.
Yeah. And that's not going to work in the rain or in the snow, yeah. Right? I mean, it's like, you know, how do we as a society come up with a better way to improve what's happening here? And then strangely enough, you know, and Congress has put things in place to be able to do that. But unfortunately, the FCC has decided to abdicate about what their responsibilities are in terms of enforcement, at least here in the U.S.
Well, yeah,
around making broadband truly accessible to everyone because it's...
Well, there's another show, friend. Goodness knows.
Yeah,
but...
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway,
yeah, it's true enough. You know,
on the D6 side, I mean, hey, I mean, it's, I am happy with the progress that's being made.
And
I do believe, you know, I mean, it does highlight, you know, the differences in where things are at. And I think maybe that's one of the small, very small silver linings in what's happened with the COVID-19 situation is highlighted for society where we're doing well and where we're doing poorly.
Ed, thanks so much for coming back on the show. I've been a long time coming, and I'm glad you're here, and I'm glad things are we're making our way one way or the other.
Yeah. Thanks so much for having me on, Richard.
You bet. And we'll talk to you next time on Run As Radio.